So in 2003, I got one of the first G5 Power Macs that came out. You know, the first time they introduced the cheese grater design and everything. And there were three tiers. I think I got the middle tier one. So the lowest, you know, two-chip version I could get, right?
Right.
And I got the machine and it was great, but I kept having these weird, weird problems. There were a couple problems with that first gen in that machine, like little weird whistling noises and stuff. This was something weird. It would kind of go and freeze periodically and not crash, not a kernel panic. It was just kind of like freeze up completely. You'd have to force restart. And Apple support was really, really great. You know, they kept, you know, they would send me, you know, diagnostic problems to programs to run and so I could get data there and figure out what was going on and, you know, do a lot of back and forth. We swapped out a number of graphics cards. They upgraded my graphics cards, all this stuff.
And at this point, there was no Apple store, right?
No.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you know what? I think they did exist, but it wasn't something that I was going to – what they weren't as prevalent.
Right.
So I think those started in 2001, if I recall correctly. The problem kept getting worse, and I got really, really frustrated. And finally, after about a couple months of this – and it wasn't – I could still use the machine, but this problem would pop up inopportune times, right?
Right.
And for the money I spent, I wanted it to be, you know, work better. So I sent an email to sjobs@apple.com. Just, you know, it can't hurt. And I basically explained, hey, I've been a user since, you know, my parents got the Apple II GS back in the day. And like, I really love your products as of X, Y, and Z. And having this problem, can you go and offer any advice, point me in the right direction, maybe put me in touch with like, you know, a higher up representative, something. That next day, I got a phone call from someone saying that they were Steve Jobs' assistant and that he had gotten the email and they wanted to go and resolve the problem. So they sent me out a brand new machine. The line had been updated at that point. So I got an upgraded machine for free. And it worked better and worked fine ever since.
This is Tech Bacon, a weekly conversation about the latest in technology, new media,
and random foodstuffs. We're your hosts. I'm Scott Gold.
I'm Brian Bishop. And this is episode number
27.
Hey, everybody. It is August 27th, actually.
August 27th.
Yeah.
And episode 27th?
Uh-huh.
Oh, look at
interesting.
That.
Yeah.
Interesting. Wow.
So welcome to the show, everybody. August has continued to be a surprising month of just crazy, crazy news. Once again, thought this was supposed to be quiet, and not so much.
No, this summer has been news that is shocking the tech world.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm sure you've all heard about this at this point, but Wednesday afternoon, Apple sent out a press release and a letter was published, and Steve Jobs resigned as CEO of Apple. He had been on medical leave since January, kind of like an open-ended medical leave.
Which was his second medical leave, right?
Actually, his third. He took one in 2004 when he had, you know, the treatment for his pancreatic cancer originally in 2009 to get a liver transplant.
Right.
And then this one. Previously before, like one in 2009, it said it was going to be a 6-month leave and he was basically back, you know, to the day.
Yeah, it was like 6 months out, back
yeah,
in.
And back I'm in, here. No problem. Yeah. And this one, it was kind of open-ended, which didn't really feel very good, you know, at the time. But, you know, and it's obvious that his health has been declining in recent years.
Yeah, and so I mean, this letter of resignation. He said he was resigning as Apple CEO, but still going to stay on as what was it, chairman of the board?
Chairman of the board, and as an employee,
and as an Apple employee, right? As Brian said,
and it's probably worth reading the letter actually, just for people that maybe haven't read it because it's very there's a lot of.
Sure.
There's a lot of stuff in the letter and the way it's written that kind of speaks to the situation
that's going on,
you know?
Yeah, read it.
Basically, August 24th, 2011, just titled Letter from Steve Jobs to the Apple Board of Directors and the Apple Community. I've always said if there ever came a day when I could no longer meet my duties and expectations as Apple CEO, I would be the first to let you know. Unfortunately, that day has come. I hereby resign as CEO of Apple. I would like to serve, if the board sees fit, as chairman of the board, director, and Apple employee. As far as my successor goes, I strongly recommend that we execute our succession plan and name Tim Cook as CEO of Apple. I believe Apple's brightest and most innovative days are ahead of it, and I look forward to watching and contributing to its success in a new role. I've made some of the best friends of my life at Apple, and I thank you all for the many years of being able to work alongside you, Steve. And
it's short and very telling.
Yeah, what's sad about the whole thing in particular is that first paragraph. You know,
I can no longer perform my duties.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that day has come because everybody has known that he's been. You know, actually, no, we haven't known what exactly he's been suffering from. Originally, when he started, you know, dropping weight, they said it was some sort of nutrient imbalance that was going on as a symptom. You know, of his liver transplant. But I mean, not surprisingly, you know, he's very, very, you know. Tight-lipped on his personal stuff. Apple's tight-lipped on everything.
I mean, for the most part, I think it, I think it's safe to say that it's obviously, not obviously, but I think it's safe to say he had pancreatic cancer. And if anybody, if you know anything about pancreatic cancer, there is no cure for pancreatic cancer. It's a fast-moving cancer, and I, to be honest, it's amazing that he has been around this long. He has defied the odds at this point.
Well, the thing was, in 2004, the kind that he had is actually one that is treatable with surgery. It's like a very, very rare, you know, version of pancreatic cancer, which is why they could treat it, you know, back in 2004 in the first place.
Right.
What has happened since is up in the air. Has it recurred? Has something else happened? You know, did it? You know, has it recurred somewhere else? Like, we don't really know. And Scott is choking on coffee. In any case, you know, anybody who's been watching just the keynotes for the last few years can see that he has been getting increasingly frail over the last few years. It really struck me, not so much in the iPad 2 launch, but when he did the he basically did the whole pitch to the Cupertino Council for the new Apple mothership
last month or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it was like 2 days after that last keynote, and he looked very, very, you know, frail there. And it was, you know, you see them doing the keynotes and you know that is like stage designed and presented, and obviously he gets fired up about that kind of stuff. And to see him in a different context with, you know, disgusting fluorescent lighting with, you know, a bunch of, you know, city council people, it was, you know what I mean, it's just a different environment, and he just looked really, really tired.
Yeah, no, that's true,
you know. And so it's hard. There's really two elements to the story. There's like, you know, what does this mean for Apple moving forward, and also what does this indicate about, you know, him, you know, as a man and his, you know, his well-being going forward.
You know, and also just to say, we don't know if it's because he's sick. It, to me, it's strikingly obvious, but nobody in these news media, you know, everyone out there is reluctant to say that it's, you know, it's because he is gravely ill. But in my opinion, it seems very obvious that that is why. I don't think a guy like Steve Jobs resigns in this fashion unless you know he's very sick.
Yeah. Well, I think there's two options. There's you know, that option. And there are certain things that have been happening around him and Apple already that make me think that perhaps that is, you know, once again, we don't know.
Nobody knows.
But certain things that have, you know, switched that, you know, or maybe are a bit telling. His biography, which is scheduled to come out in March of next year, was at least recently got moved up to October of this year, I believe. October, November this year release. Mm-hmm. And that's been a no holds barred, you know, biography. He basically let Walter Isaacson just do whatever he wanted, interview whoever he wanted. There's 40 interviews with Jobs in there, I think. Yeah. And it's going to cover, you know, his, you know, it's going to cover his resignation, they've already said, but it's basically a no, you know, full access situation. So, you know, it's going to be covering his, you know, his medical stuff.
Right.
And I have a hard time believing somebody like that, like Jobs, would want that book coming out when he's, you know, hanging out and just doing stuff with his family and whatnot. So that to me is probably the most tellingly upsetting element of it all. So I don't see that book coming out while he's, you know, even in decent health, you know, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is much more, you know.
Yeah, we don't know. Yeah. It could be, as Brian and I were talking before, I mean, it could be maybe he is sick, but he's got a little while left and he just wants to enjoy his life.
Yeah, because that's the other option. I guess clear that all of this has been part of a very orchestrated plan on his part and on the part of Apple to go and transition him away from the company in a way that is the least damaging and sets Apple up for as much future success as they can, which
and so far has been a very successful plan.
Yeah, because, you know, he stepped away. You know, Tim Cook is the new CEO, basically, and Tim Cook has served as CEO for three times now. And, you know, in 2004, in 2009, and now he was named official CEO on Wednesday. It's very interesting. Apple, he signed a deal with Apple. They are giving him 1 million shares of stock, but it doesn't become fully vested until 5-year and 10-year points. So basically, he only gets that stock, you know, 5 years from now, and he gets the other half, you know, 10 years from now.
Let's see how you do, buddy.
Well, it's also
it's basically the same, like we have
confidence in you to go and, you know, make this, you know, to, you know, it's huge incentive to go and have the stock be worth more than it is today. And also in him saying, I'm fine, you know, doing that 5 and 10 years out,
right.
I know we
I got
can, I can pull it off and
right.
I can do this. So that's kind of cool.
Very.
So Cook has basically been in there before. But and so like if you look at the thing in January, it's, you know, okay, cool. Jobs steps away in January. He did, you know, much less at the keynote, you know, and when was the iPad 2 keynote? It was in May?
Something like that.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
And so he's been slowly transitioning out. The big fear everybody thought is if Jobs, you know, steps away, then, you know, stock's going to drop. Everybody's going to freak out. People freaked out. You know, when this was announced on Wednesday,
a little.
This got dipped a little bit,
just a little,
and it's now up.
Yeah, it really had very little effect.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of people that have been saying that, you
which
know,
is
the threat.
Kudos to them, man.
Yeah, and the threat of Jobs leaving may actually have been a, you know, depressing the stock price a bit because you don't know what's going to happen with that and when's the shoe going to drop.
Right.
And so now that this has happened, people can move forward and there's more confidence from investors.
The biggest obstacle I see them having to overcome is whatever their next product launch is, whatever the next thing that they're launching post Jobs resigning.
Mm-hmm.
If they fumble, which they have a track record of not.
Yeah, but anything can happen totally.
But if they fumble, I think it will be way more devastating than if Jobs had announced a new product and they fumbled. Because then it's going to be perceived as that.
Definitely.
You know what I mean?
Well,
I think he got his hands in the next few years of stuff already. But I'm just saying in the public eye. That's going to be the perception.
Yeah. Well,
that's the big hurdle they have to overcome.
Definitely. I think the media is going to be very, very excited in a perverse way to kind of go and jump on that as a story. There have already been some stories that have been breaking saying Apple's got to go and go open source now, or they've got to license iOS
right.
now.
So, come on, people.
Which is the stuff you heard like 5 years ago until Apple became so dominant that they just kind of shut up and said, okay, maybe your thing works. Now you're going to see that again because, Tim Cook, is unproven. So yeah, the pressure on him's got to be incredibly enormous. I can't even imagine it. I mean, the pressure on us to do this show is pretty big.
I mean, seriously.
But his is probably a little bit worse.
just a tiny bit.
But
barely measurable.
Yeah. But joking aside, Tim Cook is a ninja basically when it comes to he basically was the chief operating officer. The way Apple has gotten all these, they've basically been able to own in terms of getting components for cheap and implementing new manufacturing processes and working with people to go and
integral part of the company.
Yeah.
And has been for quite some time.
And the success that Apple has had in, dominating, just in terms of components and that kind of stuff is due, in large part to him. So in that sense, he's a great person to have on the team. He is a crazy strong negotiator from all intents and purposes, everybody that's, reported it. So in that sense, because that's another thing. Jobs is such a big personality. How's it going to happen negotating with, a movie studio guy?
He's what you associate Apple with.
Yeah.
Steve Jobs is what you associate Apple with. You know what I mean? To me, I was saying this earlier. It's like back in the day, it was Walt Disney. You associated Walt Disney with Disney.
Yeah.
But look at what has happened to the Walt Disney Company.
Don't say that because there was the Michael Eisner era. And that wasn't good.
Actually, Michael Eisner saved the company.
I don't like the Eisner era.
I know, but he saved the company. They would have been gone were it not for Mr. Eisner. It's true. It's however much you don't like the guy, he saved that company.
No, I didn't say I didn't like the guy. I just didn't like...
He saved the company, man.
Fair enough.
He had the... Come on. He did.
Fair enough.
But think about it, though. That was a hurdle that company had to get over.
Right.
And I think Apple it has a similar feel to a company like Disney. And obviously, they're very tied together these days. But if you think about it, a guy like Jobs is this figurehead. He's the mascot of the company as a human being. And so now that he's not going to be around, how does that affect the way people think of Apple?
Are you saying that Apple should go and get an animated mouse for a mascot?
Yes.
I don't like that idea. I don't like that idea at all.
Maybe an animated apple?
You really know. This is
that looks like Steve with glasses? And little, no.
I don't like this conversation anymore at all.
I'm curious to see. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how the company proceeds now. What happens?
Well, I think the truth is obviously they know from when they had the Antennagate scandal, then they brought, journalists into their whole testing facilities, and they're talking to engineers, and one of the engineers there actually said straight up, we've been testing the iPhone 4 for 2 years. So physical product testing goes at least a minimum 2 years out.
Years
conceptual
out.
Product,
to 10.
Yeah, because you got to figure at this point they have been executing such a patient and steady and consistent strategy over time here, starting with the iPod and moving forward. I feel like there is definitely a plan here. Whatever comes next, whether it's a move into the living room, whatever they have in mind, has already been conceived. It's already figured out. It's about execution at this point. At a certain point, though, you do have to go and say, where does the next product idea come from? Because they have incredible talent there. Incredible talent. There is that notion that Jobs is the guy that can basically say, I want to make this crazy jump. That seems like it makes no sense, but I think it's going to be disruptive. Nobody goes along because it's him.
Yeah, he's one of those guys.
Yeah. Who does that voice become in the company? I think we're going to have to wait and see.
And I don't think – I think Tim Cook's a great successor, but that's not Tim Cook.
Right.
And he's not that guy. I mean, these guys are few and far between, and maybe that guy won't end up at Apple for quite some time.
Yeah, if at all. I mean,
if at all.
Because the truth is, I think you can't go and if you look to replace Steve Jobs, you're setting the company up for failure. They can't do that. He is truly a singular individual. It could be argued that he's perhaps the most influential business mind of the last 100 years. I mean, that sounds like crazy hyperbole, but, you know, is he in the same league as Ford and stuff like that? I mean, you could make that argument quite easily.
Absolutely.
You know? So you can't replace that guy. You don't replace Thomas Edison. You just don't, you know, you right. basically try to move what he did forward.
Right. And you try to keep the spirit of the company the same.
Yeah. And they've done a lot of work in the last few years setting up the Apple University, which is basically a training group for the corporate core, I guess, of the company to basically instill the values that, you know, Jobs has kind of like, you know, saw were fit for the company. So they've been doing a lot of work. They've been setting this up for a long time.
You know, this
goes back to what I was saying earlier about, I mean, not to cut you off, about setting this up as a transition, you know?
Right.
You know, one version is that he is, you know, gravely ill and it's, you know, and they have to do something now and it's the worst possible scenario and it's really, really tragic and upsetting. The other option is that they are going off of an orderly timeline and patiently executing a true succession plan, not just like Tim's the next guy, but like how are we going to go and move this company forward or over a period of years. And maybe part of that is Apple University, Jobs stepping away in January is part of that. You know, getting everything going with like the new, you know, with the new headquarters, getting Tim Cook in now. Because the truth is, Tim Cook steps in now, you're seeing no hit on the price.
None.
If the iPhone 5 and 4S are hit products, and there's no reason right now to think why they shouldn't be, if they're going to remain consistent, you know, that sets them up in such a great way to move forward without Jobs at the helm. They're setting the stage to let the product speak for itself,
right?
You know, and let that carry things forward. And I think that's what everybody is kind of hoping the situation is, where it's basically, it's not immediately pushed because of medical reasons. And the other thing too, I want to touch on really, really briefly. This is a man whose force of will is palpable, obviously, and who, you know, creates his own path in the world, right? And he is facing these, you know, limitations of just being, you know, a human being.
Sure.
But the way that he has, you know, moved forward with that is kind of, in a strange way, it's very, very inspiring, because I think a lot of people could see themselves being faced with this kind of mortality and crumble and succumb and have it be a really, really horrible experience. And everybody knows people that have, you know, dealt with this, you know, of a disease, basically. And I think it's inspiring for a lot of people. And I mean, for me, I think everybody, you know, to basically say in the face of that, you know, he's not, you know, resigning his humanity. He's moving forward on his own terms, you know, for the best for his family and friends. And there's something really, really nice about that.
Yeah. I really can't wait to read his biography, and I want to hear his words on how he feels about all this stuff, because he's never talked about it.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling it's going to be just as inspiring as how he's been dealing with it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's a human being. I'm sure he's going to be, you know, have comments like any human being that's facing mortality will have. But it's going to be interesting and I think very thought-provoking to read this when it comes out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just because it's something that nobody has heard word one about. At all.
Yeah.
You know, at all. And I'm curious to hear a guy that is, you know, the way he talks about products, I'm curious to hear him talk about life and himself.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be fascinating to read that book when it comes out.
Definitely.
Now, you know, I think, as the company, as Apple moves forward, to me, what a smart move would be for them. And, you know, this is just me in my own head. I feel like, you know, there's not going to be this figurehead that's going to replace Steve Jobs. I mean, he's going to be the ghost. It's going to be the ghost of Steve Jobs hovering over this company for decades. You know, just like Walt Disney and Disney World. I think it's the same thing. Like, that is part of that company forever.
Yeah,
forever.
Definitely.
That's always going to be part of that company.
And was on a segue.
Well, of course. But I think they would be smart to actually start promoting multiple people as these figureheads per product. You know, all of a sudden there's the guy that came out with the new design for the iPhone and he's on stage and he's the rock star. And then there's the next OS guy that he's the rock star. You know, like, they can actually start promoting multiple people to fill that void of the figurehead and have all these Apple rock stars out there in the world. And I think that would be a really cool thing.
Well, it's really, really funny you say that, because the last keynote, they've started doing that in the last few years.
They bring in
Scott Forstall to talk, who's head of, like, you know, the iOS team. He talks about iOS stuff. They bring, you know, Jonathan Ive is always in those great videos talking about design and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and they've got,
and
know,
I think they're going to continue that. And I think what we're going to see, it's not going to be right away, but I think in a few years, there's going to be some young kid who helps redesign one of their products, you know, that he's not going to be the Steve Jobs, but he's going to be an Apple rock star.
Yeah.
He's going to, like, those people are going to, I think, come up and out into the world a little bit more. It's going to be different, you know?
Well, it's cool. What's neat about it, and there's been this great outpouring of, you know, of sentiment and whatnot on Twitter and everything over the last few days. But you do get this sense that even without Jobs, you know, Jobs is, you know, an aspirational figure in a certain sense where, you know, even if you, you know, even when he is left from Apple, Apple will still be the company that you said that, like, that's kind of like that's still made in his image. Succeeding at Apple in design, for example, is like a pinnacle, you know, and people will still want to do that as like, you know, that is the ultimate feather in your cap. And like, it's a great opportunity for a lot of people. I don't think that's going to go away. And that's what, as long as the talent is there, you know,
they've created a culture. And as long as they maintain that culture, it's going to be fine. Now, what worries me, however, is you have a guy like Jobs who when he, you know, they have their mobile me suite, right?
Yeah.
And he's the guy that says, this isn't working. Stop. Start from scratch.
Right.
Who's that guy now? It's going to be more of a committee thing. And that, you know, may be some hindrance in the way things get developed. Because having that singular voice that can say that, I mean, yes, obviously it has to be approved. But when Steve Jobs says, let's stop developing this and rebuild, you rebuild.
Is it going to be a committee, you know? Though? I don't know if it is going to be. It seems like that is...
It's not going to be Tim Cook.
But I have a hard time believing that the... I think committee, I mean, that's something that, you know, product development by committee seems so antithetical. And he said as much to Jobs, way he perceives things. I can't think he would basically set it up with that kind of structure. That basically seems like he'd be setting it up to fail. You know what I mean?
Well, I think these kind of products, you can't do that. Yeah, they have their departments and stuff like that. But I'm just saying to make that big of a decision is not going to be just a product head guy. No, they're going to be dug into their product, and they're not going to want to make that decision.
Right.
So where does that come down from?
And where does that come from in a design sense? Yeah, because a lot of these things are usability and design calls, not necessarily like manufacturing and efficiency calls.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not. Well, this is going to cost too much, or this is going to. This doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, like this isn't right. It's these broad terms in terms of software and hardware and all that stuff. You know, that Jobs was the guy to make those calls.
It's going to be very, very interesting. And one thing I wonder, and this is just a gut thing, right? By name, by, you know, what, by all accounts, you know, up until January, Jobs was still definitely involved. And since January, he's been actively involved in everything. I wonder if this has already been going on in a test run case for a while already. Because there are even some subtle changes. The pivot in OS X. I mean, a lot of the stuff, obviously, conceptually was taken care of a while ago. But there has been a different feel slightly than last year. And I just wonder. I don't see
if
he's
been stepping back without it being public.
Correct.
Basically.
Because if he steps away public, that's the big, you know, boogaboo, and everybody freaks out in the
but
market.
But he's
right?
been kind of just stepping back gradually, letting the teams go and see what happens.
Yeah, and course correcting as need be to see everything's set. It seems like that would make sense, you know?
I wouldn't be surprised if that's what's been going on for a while.
And, you know, by that letter, he says, you know, he's going to go and be chairman of the board, still be overlooking. Obviously, excuse me, we all hope that is, you know, the case.
As far as we know, for right now, he's still there.
Yeah, and we all hope he can be there as, you know, long as possible to do his thing. But it is going to be – the next few years are going to be very interesting. And you're right. The first bump is going to be huge. What happens – you know, what would have happened if they had, like you said, Mobile Me or the antenna problem or any of the kind of minor bumps they've had in recent years? How did they handle that then? Because at the time he was on – was he on leave and AntennaGate happened?
I don't remember.
Remember him coming was like a big deal. He's like, oh, no, job is coming down to go and like, you know, to set the stuff straight. It was like, ooh, big guns time, right? Like I don't know what happens. They deal with that now. It's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens moving forward.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So more to come.
Yeah.
But that was, you know, sent shockwaves across the news this week.
Yeah. I mean, because any way you cut it, you know, end of an era. And there's a lot of mixed emotions
about
people
it also,
that are Apple fans and mixed up with that.
But just, I mean, think about just and not just Apple. Like, you know, like Steve Jobs is not running Apple anymore. Bill Gates is not running Microsoft anymore. Like these are big things that in the computer world that just, I mean, he hasn't been for a while, you know, like it's we're on the edge of the next great thing.
Of a new frontier.
Yes. But on the next great thing.
I have my like, Spock ears on right now.
What is it going to be? You know, like that, whatever this, the next Microsoft or the next Apple is, I think is probably in the beginning stages now, you know?
Or is it Google? I mean, you don't know.
No, I mean, even I'm saying the next, even past
that. Or beyond that.
Yeah. I think is right now is when the seeds of that are being started.
Definitely.
You know, so it's exciting, I think.
But we, you know, just our you know, wishes and thoughts are with, you know, with Jobs and his family.
Absolutely.
And we all sincerely hope this is a, you know, something that he's doing on his own, because he just wants to go and, you know, hang out more, and he's, you know, going
to
be
he
with
wants
us.
To enjoy
and,
some more life.
Yeah, and he's going to be with us and they overlooking and browbeating, you know, Tim Cook and everybody else for many, many years to come.
That's what we're hoping. Yeah. That's what we're hoping. So there has been some other news this week. Aside from this, even though that's all that anybody's been talking about,
a couple
other things, I suppose. What else do we got on the list, Brian?
Well, you want to talk about, you know, last week we'd had the whole conversation about the touchpad.
Oh yeah,
right. I handed the touchpad off to you,
Brian. I gotta call it out. Brian did solid to me. He was very nice. He got the touchpad, but he has his iPad and he figured he didn't really need it, so he let me buy it, and that was very cool, and I really appreciate it. On air, I'm saying it right now.
Oh, cool. It's going to be it's good for me because I get to, you know, Scott's going to go and hack the hell out of it, of course,
yeah.
You know, so I can still see that, but cool.
No, so yeah, I mean, I've been playing with it, you know, I've had it for the past week, and I'm really, it's been pissing me off.
Thank you. And it's pissed me off.
Yeah. And here's why it's pissed me off. It's pissed me off because it's actually a viable product. After this, I mean, you know, Brian and I got it when it first came out, and there were a lot of glitches. It was really buggy. It wasn't really – I didn't find it all that usable. You couldn't play certain video files. It was laggy, blah, blah, blah. So they released a software update, you know, a few weeks back, and that's what I have on there now. And this device is a completely viable, usable device. And it really upsets me that they released it too early. They released it, and it wasn't ready to go. And they completely shot themselves in the foot. Yeah, I've been using this. It's nice. It's nice. I mean, I really have to say, I quite enjoy it. I really like the interface. It's crashed on me a couple of times.
Right.
You know, obviously the app catalog is limited, but I've just been using it pretty much to check my email, surf the web, you know, throw it on the couch, whatever, you know, do a little reading.
Very nice.
Yeah. So thanks, HP. Thanks a lot. really appreciate, you know, what you did here.
Well, to be fair to HP, you would not have bought it if it was still $500, even $400. So.
However, were it to come out and get glowing reviews because it worked right initially, it would be an option.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? Like, I still would I get it over spending the same price on an iPad? Probably not. But they are, you know, this is a very interesting marketing example for people out there. In general, you know, like you think about the sales of this thing have been explosive. Now, obviously, they're explosive because you're getting a $500 piece of equipment for $99.
Right.
That's the biggest thing. And I'm not hearing a lot of people talk about that. But that to me, that's the reason it's selling so well. Not because it's $99 in general. It's because you're getting a $500 product for $99.
That's true. Because people,
it's,
you know,
your value, what you're getting.
It's not. Yeah, totally. It's because the people
aren't,
you know,
talking about that much, though.
Well, there's the whole notion
really
of like, oh, is it going to be, you know, like now if you come out with a $200 tablet, that's going to be like gangbusters. What if you come out with a $200 tablet that is made with $200 worth of components and
right.
It's kind of a crap sandwich because of that?
Exactly.
Maybe that's not going to be so, you know, so money. But
no. But yeah. Now what I have been reading, some people. We're talking about, and I can't remember what it was, some media outlet, a reporter had a little article about this, and they said it would be smart for another tablet maker to release a $500 tablet discounted to $100 for a month as a complete loss leader just to get it in people's hands. Now, that's a smart idea. That's a smart – basically, just use it as marketing. That's your marketing money instead of advertising.
I think Topolsky was on Twitter. Joshua Topolsky from This Is My Next on The Verge was
talking
about this.
There were a couple people talking about this. But what a smart idea. Why not do that? I mean, like, instead of spending millions of dollars on a marketing campaign, right? Lose the money on the tablets. Get it into hundreds of thousands of people's hands. And then all of a sudden, you have a viable platform in a lot of people's hands. And if they're enjoying it, great.
But here's the problem with that. If you basically go and say
– you do it as a rebate. You know, you don't have to sell it in the stores that much.
Well, I think if it's a rebate, I don't think it does as well. I think the
or
key
instant
is that
rebate, instant rebate,
on site, yeah,
yeah, on site rebate.
It's tough because if you do that, and you're basically saying, okay, it's worth $100. Do people then buy it afterwards for $500, and their friend got it for $100?
Well, here's what I think. Here's what I think happens. Maybe not, but if it's in, let's say, 500,000 people's hands, and they like it, then the next round of products comes out, and they're on board.
But they're on board. You know, but they're on board for like $100 tablet, not for a $500 tablet. That's the problem. If you set that expectation, if people,
it's tricky slope.
And also because the people that want to buy a tablet at $100 are not necessarily the people that want to go and buy a tablet at $500.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
But it would be a, like for a web OS for something. Not, I don't think it would really work for an Android or now. But when you're launching a new OS, you know, like this essentially, and it was on the phones, but essentially it was a new OS.
Sure.
I think it works in that realm. You know, when you're trying to actually get something brand new out there, it's an interesting concept. It's an
Definitely.
Interesting concept. I don't, you know, whether it would fully work or not, I don't know. But obviously people are hungry for a cheap quality device.
Yeah. And this is going to be interesting how this plays out. I forget, we talked about this a little bit last week, but how this $100 tablet is going to eat up a lot of sales at people that want a budget tablet, right? How that's going to go and affect, sales this quarter of Android devices and the playbook is going to be very, very interesting.
I think it's going to affect them.
I think it has to, because I think if people want to spend $500 in a tablet, they're going to go and buy an iPad. I think at this point, very few people are saying, I'm going to go and jump to a different, you know, platform. The edge that other devices have is on price. Now, Playbook's not competing there yet, but some Android devices are. And if you can go and get a $100 one, if anybody has an inkling to go and get a cheaper tablet that's not an iPad, they probably got one of these. You know,
yeah,
or if they couldn't get one, they're going to say like, well, I'll spend $100, but I'm not going to spend $300 on an Android tablet because I could have gotten this thing for $100. So it sets, you know, price expectations a certain way.
Definitely. But I do think it's going to make these manufacturers a little more aware of pricing out the competition.
Yeah,
because I think they've all not been doing that. They've all been trying to price match with Android. I mean, with the iPad, you know. And I think maybe we'll see a little bit of price war, which could be fun. It's always good for the consumer.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the main angle that, you know, other manufacturers have against Apple right now. They can basically, you know, they can undercut them on price. They're not going to go and match them on features. They're not going to match them on app catalog. It's just not an option at this point. You know, they just don't have the installed base to, you know, encourage. They don't have the supply chain to go and even get the price down really. But unless they make a cheaper quality tablet at a lower price.
Well, and that's the
which
problem.
Is what we think Amazon's, you know, strategy is going
to
be.
And very curious to see what happens with that. And that's definitely – we always knew that's going to be a cheaper price point than the iPad, but it's going to be less feature sets. I mean, I'm very convinced that that's what's going to happen.
Absolutely. And also, in turn, I think it's going to be it's not going to be designed as well. I think they're just going to go and say, we're going to make a chunkier tablet. It's not going to feel as nice. It's going to be, I mean, Kindle hardware is utilitarian, but it's not nice. You know, it's that kind of thing.
But when they designed the Kindle, they really went to how would this be while I'm reading? Okay, so for the tablet, how will this be when I'm watching a TV show?
Sure.
You know, not how will it be when I'm clicking around, surfing the web, doing apps, blah, blah, blah. How will it be when I'm watching something?
Yeah. I expect it to be completely consumption-oriented as well.
Yeah. So we'll see about that. It's interesting. Just in a quick aside, did you see that thing about the playbook, the next OS update having ActiveSync in it?
Oh, ActiveSync.
And not
BlackBerry Exchange Server?
Yeah. These people.
But it is going to have a native email application.
Yeah, that's true.
So yay.
They can't use their own software, but hey.
Yay for research in motion.
Should I talk about the BlackBerry device?
Well, you should, because I actually think these are nice devices.
So this is BlackBerry released a couple of new devices this week with the BlackBerry 7 OS on them. And this is going to be the last BlackBerry OS before they move on to their new QNX software,
right?
I guess. I mean, that's what has been said pretty much.
Yeah. So it's supposed to be first quarter next year.
Yeah. So they released a new BlackBerry Bold. This is the 9000 series. And a new Torch, I believe. Were those the two?
That's the slide up.
Yeah. There were three, I think. Bold, a Torch, and like one that's replacing like what the Storm used to be, where it's just touchscreen.
Gotcha.
So they got these three. So I had a chance to get some hands-on time with the new Bold for Verizon. And I think it's the 9930 or something like that. I got to say, nice device. Nice feel. Looks pretty. It's thin. It weighs well. Kind of the outside is just like the iPhone.
The metal band
around the outside.
That's what I noticed. It looks really, really nice. Funny. It has that really sweet little metal band. Yeah. It looks really, really nice.
A nice big touch screen and a full QWERTY keyboard. Very, very nice device. Fast, nice 1.2 gigahertz processor inside, you know, running. The BlackBerry 7 OS, is it much different than the 6? No. Is it? Could I tell any difference? No.
Now, how is it using that touchscreen on that kind of device?
Annoying.
With that software.
Annoying. annoying. It doesn't make sense. You can't bring up menus with the touchscreen. So all I could do is select the apps.
It's just maybe for tapping targets. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, like, you can't, it's not like click and hold and the menu comes up, or at least that I noticed. I didn't see that availability. That would make sense. You know, the touchscreen worked well. It was accurate. It was fine. You could scroll up and down through address books. That was okay. It was nice. The screen was bigger than the other bolts, which was nice. If you like Blackberries, you want this device. Let's put it that way. If you're a Blackberry person and you want a new Blackberry, get this because it's fantastic for a Blackberry. The problem is they're a day late and a dollar short.
Yeah.
I mean, if they had come out with this device, I don't know, a year ago or even 10 months ago, then there would be something to talk about. Unfortunately, they didn't. So this is a great this is what the last generation of BlackBerry devices should have been. They're basically a generation behind. Because if you had this as the last generation of BlackBerry, I don't think we would be so upset that they're behind, because you have a 1.2 gigahertz processor, you have a touchscreen, you have an OS running fast, and you know that they're going somewhere better. But now, by the time they get to somewhere better, all the other phones are even light years ahead.
Now, do you think that that would still be the case with the software it's currently running? Because that's always the big question, right? Their software has been laggy, and QNX is the future. When they get that place, then they can really compete with Android, with Apple, and whatnot.
Maybe.
Design only takes you so far. You know what I mean?
Right.
It seems like that is definitely like – I mean, I haven't seen one in person. The pictures, they look beautiful.
It's a beautiful device. Yeah, they did a great job. And I, like I said before, if you are a BlackBerry person and you're not giving up your BlackBerry – you want this. This is everything you've wanted out of your crappy old BlackBerry.
Right. You know, this is funny. This is probably the thing that goes in, you know, people that are considering, you know, people in enterprise are considering jumping. They go, well, this thing's really, really nice. It's kind of sexy. I'll stick around for a little bit while longer.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think about QNX? Do you think?
I don't know. I mean, all I have is the little experience I had with the playbook.
Yeah.
I don't know. And obviously they're having trouble with their own enterprise server connecting to their new software.
That's shocking. And what happens?
The
playbook thing, they basically, you know, BlackBerry Enterprise Server is what they use to go as the proprietary, you know,
email client,
right? Yeah. And they said
not just email, actually management client
for contacts and all this kind of stuff. It was so funny. There was an article, we'll link to it in show notes, where they talked about why it's not in this new version of the playbook software that you were talking about, because it's really, really hard to get QNX working with BlackBerry Enterprise Server. So it's
shouldn't that have been the first thing?
Right?
The first, before anything else, before design, before anything, get
core
it working.
Functionality.
With, yes.
Like what? So what does that mean? Does that mean it's not going to launch? These QNX devices are going to launch with Exchange support only?
I mean, I would be amazed.
You know what? Here's what's funny. I would not be surprised though, because they've been so bizarre in their strategy.
Can we make a prediction? Who's buying BlackBerry in the next year? Who's buying RIM? Because they're not surviving.
We know it's going to be funny because you're going to have
who's buying them?
All these enterprise customers. They're going to either go and
like
see
Microsoft.
QNX. Oh, you mean who's going to buy the company?
Yeah.
Method Devices.
I'm nobody.
But. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens next year, because when they launch these QNX devices, they're either going to go – people will adopt them and move forward, and they'll – you know, the change interface, people will get on board and it'll be fine, or they'll hate them. They will not sell them. They'll want the old devices, and then it is just a ticking clock.
Now, the only thing that can kind of help – not help them but keep them hanging on is I have seen some people doing this recently, and it was interesting is they had – and this is a couple people recently, this isn't like an overall effect, but I see a trend maybe, had iPhones and iPads, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they have ditched the iPhone to go back to a BlackBerry and keep the iPad.
Because they like the keyboard?
Yeah, and they like the email functionality, but they get everything else because they can carry around their iPad with them.
Yeah.
It was interesting to see that because, you know, okay, well, I can do everything that I want to do on the phone, but I have my iPad, so I have my iPad with me almost all the time.
So they're not missing the additional functionality.
They're not missing the experience. It's strange. I don't know if that's going to be a really big trend, but I noticed it, and it made me think.
Lots of attorneys I know, they love the iPad, but they would never ditch their BlackBerry.
Right.
You know, never.
Yeah. And a battery life, I think, has something to do with that, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Well, the battery life on these new BlackBerries is supposed to be 3 days. It's supposed to be fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. No, it's a...
And that is
solid
the one,
device,
and
man.
That is the one, you know, that's the one great, you know, competitive, you know, advantage BlackBerry still has over these other devices. I'm going to know what
not
happens.
Not going to have it that long.
That's what I'm saying. You know, what happened? I think it's definitely like the next, you know, frontier of competition, right? You've seen it, you know,
Think about what happened with the Mac, and you've seen it across the board with laptops now, but with the Mac laptops, they went from batteries that last 2.5 hours, and the next generation was 8 to 10.
Yeah.
That's how big that leap was. We're going to see the same thing in phones.
Yeah. What happens when, you know, other phones start lasting 2 days?
Okay.
Yeah. You don't have to worry about it? No? Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So, It was. I'm glad I got a chance to play around with it. The software moves fast. You notice it. You know, compared to the other devices, that 1.2 gigahertz processor makes a noticeable difference to the speed of the software. The feel of it in your hands, awesome. You know, so they did something right for a year ago.
Well, to counterbalance the doing something right, why don't you talk about the music service that had popped up?
Oh, yes. So they do something right and they do something ridiculous. They're launching a BlackBerry music service that works with BlackBerry Messenger. So it's like a social BlackBerry service, social BlackBerry music service. For a couple bucks a month, you get access to 50 songs, and every month you can change your songs, but you can only change 25 a month in your 50-song list. And they're available on your device, and then anybody that you're connected to through BBM, you can share songs with them, and you can play their songs and whatever. I don't see the point of this service at all. I don't understand it. I don't understand it.
I think they're trying to emulate the Motorola Rocker strategy, which is we're going to give you like 50 or 100 songs, whatever, and it's
going to pay for it.
$5 a month for 50. I don't understand.
Okay, what makes you not want to use Spotify or Rhapsody or anything else if you're going to pay the money?
Well, those cost $10.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Unlimited songs.
Now, unlimited
songs for $10.
No, here's 50 songs. 50 for song limit. What does that mean? You can only listen to 50. You can only listen to 50 listens a month, or 50
songs.
50
you can songs.
Unlimited
you can
times
listen
a month.
As many as you want. 50 songs, and you can, like I said, every month you can change your songs, but you can only change 25 of them per month.
I don't understand.
I don't understand it. I'd like to see somebody who's using it because I haven't tried it, but. I don't get it. I am missing the point.
Doesn't it feel like there's some bit of information tied with that has not been announced because it makes no sense otherwise?
Right. I would hope. But there's not. You guys don't know what you're doing.
Very angry.
Very angry. God. Yeah.
Well, speaking of Spotify and Audio introduced a new family style plan this week.
Yeah, that was interesting. Yeah. I mean, I wonder if that's the sign of something to come with all these subscription services in general, like all subscription services. Do you think?
It makes sense.
Makes sense,
you know,
right?
It certainly makes sense. And they're trying to go and get more people on board, because it's one thing to go and, you know, spend, you know, $10 for, you know, just you. But then, like, for your entire family, it's like, what, $50? You have, like, you know, two parents and three kids.
Yeah.
You can do a family plan for that. It makes a lot more sense.
I thought that was really smart. And everyone gets their own account within that family plan. So, like, you know, you can – it just makes sense. It's just like family plans on cell phones, I think, make sense for, you know, when you have kids and stuff like that.
Yeah. Do you have the specs on the prices in front of you?
You know what? I don't remember. They weren't cheap. It wasn't like a great deal per se. It was a little less expensive than doing individual plans. It wasn't crazy good, but I think you're going to see that come down. And I just think the option to have, you know, all these different plans tied under one benefits everybody. Don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's all about, like, you know, getting people on the service. Because once you get in the service, you get addicted to the service. It's really just about, you know, getting people on it, because you get hooked on this kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, it's like, you know, our listener, Ball Smoke, is in the chat room talking about the iPad app better than Spotify, which I agree. It's that the experience of it is totally superior. But there's that thing about having access to all those songs, you know, at a single time that is very, very... It's very nice. You know, and like, you know, because Phil Collins, as we talked about a couple of shows ago, you need access to all the Phil Collins catalog. You
absolutely.
Don't own it.
I mean, come
obviously.
On. Yeah. You know, why would you listen to anything else?
It's like, I don't own White Lion, but someone's want to listen to, you know, When the Children Cry.
I totally agree.
You know how it is, Scott.
I totally agree. I couldn't agree more. Yay. So, I mean, I don't know. Anything else we need to discuss on the tech front? I do have some food.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the Apple TV rentals really
oh,
quick.
Oh, yeah, right. Right.
Very, very quietly, Apple pulled the 99-cent TV show rentals that they had that they've been putting forward with the new Apple TV. When Apple TV 2 came out, a big thing was like you can rent these TV shows for 99 cents.
Right.
But unfortunately, they couldn't get people on board. They got Fox and they got ABC, and that was it. And even then, this, you know, selection was really limited. It was great. I used that on the Apple TV 2 this entire last season.
Yeah.
But they basically quietly pulled that. There's been lots of talk about them introducing some sort of subscription TV service, and I thought that made sense immediately because if you're going to switch over to that, you know, say at the upcoming event in September or October, you don't want to go and immediately go, you know, 99 cent option and pull that because that kind of, you know, people don't like that comparison. Wait, I want more options. But then – and there had been some articles about that, but then Greg Sandoval at CNET basically said there's definitely not going to be a subscription video service coming anytime soon. Which was interesting because this day before, this was Friday, his article came out on Thursday. Wall Street Journal had an article about the succession plan, about Tim Cook.
Yeah.
And buried in the article was this mention that Apple was working on a new streaming video technology to get video to people's TVs and was exploring a subscription service.
But I wonder, I mean, that could, yeah, but that could just be they're just working on better streaming technology.
It could be a bandwidth, you know, compression thing.
Which actually excites me, I think that would
be. Or it could be interesting if they basically are trying to go and get subscription plans going. Maybe that news leaked and now they're trying to go. Then they
leaked
to Sandoval to kind of – because the writer at Wall Street Journal that wrote this one article has been a go-to for, you know, Apple-approved, you know, leaks in the past.
Yeah. So you never know.
It's interesting. In that space, you know, I don't think they're ever going to make a TV. There's been a lot of people speculating about that. But I think Living Room is – is the next, you know, place that needs to be conquered.
Yeah, and I think they want to get into it. You know, I definitely think they want in – on the living room space, without a doubt. So we'll see. You know, the more I've thought about it, the more I understand why they kind of discontinued that service. Because if you think about it, what was the rental price for a TV show?
It's 99 cents.
Okay, and what was the purchase price for a TV show?
$1.99.
I mean, you're at such small difference in that. And, you know, if I want to catch a show, I don't want to buy it. Yeah. But, I mean, I understand it a little from their perspective and from the content providers because the difference is so little when you're talking 99 cent difference at the end of the day, you know. But I like to me, and you know, you and I have discussed this, the true dream is the full a la carte everything. So if I want to just rent one show, I would like to be able to rent one show. I don't want to have to buy the show because I'm never going to watch it again.
Yeah.
If I miss an episode or if I want to just check out a new show and I have to buy it, it's going to sit in my account forever and I'm never going to watch it again. What's the point?
It's that whole like, you know, access versus ownership thing that we've always talked about.
Right.
And I agree. Subscription, though, if it's not for a show, if it's for a channel or a suite of shows, I don't know. There's definitely opportunity there.
Yeah,
you know, and they clearly know there's opportunity there. Like, what ends up happening in terms of, you know, licensing and that stuff? Because I think the 99 cents thing would have taken off if there had been more
content,
you know, shows available. Yeah,
maybe.
And that's always the thing. You know, NBC, for example, has been playing hardball with them for years about getting the content on iTunes, and it's been frustrating.
Yeah.
But at this point, it feels like the entire TV industry is in a total defensive crouch, trying to go and keep at bay any kind of digital only options. You know, they're tying it to that TV everywhere solution.
Yep,
it's
yep.
frustrating for people that don't necessarily want to go and keep, you know, paying through the nose for a cable subscription.
True. True, true, true. All true. That's what we talk about here. True stuff.
And what about food?
Food. Oh, man. So last Saturday after the show, it's too bad I didn't have it last week because it would be so fresh in my mind. I went to an amazing restaurant in downtown Los Angeles called The Gorbals. The Gorbals is a very meat-centric place. I don't know exactly how to describe the food except to tell you about it and some of the things I had. So the first thing, and this is their signature dish, is bacon-wrapped matzo balls. Bacon. Let me say it again. Bacon-wrapped matzo balls. You with me? So contradiction in itself, being a bacon-wrapped matzo ball. You know, that's just not you would never think of that because if anybody who's Jewish and keeps kosher, you would not be eating bacon with your matzo balls. But it was a delicious pairing. And these matzo balls, they weren't like huge, big, fluffy matzo balls that you keep, you know, that you have in like matzo ball soup at most delis. You know, those are like the size of a softball. These were smaller matzo balls, you know, maybe the size of a golf ball. And then wrapped in and a pretty dense matzo ball, and then wrapped in bacon and put on the grill, not on the grill, on like the fryer, and then kind of fried up, and they come hot and crispy, and you get the, you know, the salty and the bacon flavor. Just, I would say it was almost a perfect appetizer. So well done on that, bacon wrapped matzo balls. I mean, who would have thunk?
Not bad.
Who would have thunk? Bacon wrapped matzo balls. Just saying. I can't get over it. They were so good. So what else did I have there? Also, just to describe this place a little bit so you get a feel of it. It's in downtown Los Angeles. You walk in. It's off a street called Spring Street. You walk into this building that looks like an old decrepit apartment building. And I think it is an old decrepit apartment building. I think people
It's downtown.
Yeah, I think people live here. I don't know the kind of people that live there, but people live there. You walk into this kind of grand old lobby, except it is not grand anymore, but it is definitely old, former grand old lobby. And then you keep walking in, and there's a door to this restaurant that doesn't look like it should be there. And you walk in, and it's a very nice looking, you know, kind of gastropubby type restaurant, big wood tables, you know, really nice place, open kitchen. Cool, you know. Unexpected. But, you know, this is the kind of place where you go to the bathroom, you grab a key, you walk downstairs. It's right next to the laundromat part of the apartment, you know, where the pay for washer and dryers are in the office building.
You need to be careful there, Scott.
Oh, no. You need to be very careful here. Yeah. That place, I got a little scared, I have to say.
You should bring pepper spray next time.
But back to the food. So I also enjoyed some awesome baby back ribs. Fall off the bone baby back. I mean, like, I took one bite and literally I was left with just the bone. It actually surprised me. I was like, I mean, like, completely stripped of the bone. So, you know, well prepared, really good, nice, smoky, spicy taste to it. I had tongue, which was interesting. I'm not a huge, have you ever had tongue?
I have not had tongue.
Have you ever wanted to have tongue?
You know, it's never popped up as a thing I really needed to take care of, you know, before I, you know, in the course of my lifetime. But
right.
I'm sure if it was presented and it was, I would have
it. Always it. Weirds me out that yeah. You're tasting something that could potentially taste you when it was alive.
You know, there's a lot wrong with what you just said. I just got to let that
I'm just
lie.
Saying that's what weirds me out a little bit. But, and I've had tongue before and it's usually.
Taste it while it tastes you.
Ew. You're said right. It. That doesn't sound good.
You said it.
I've had tongue before. And I'm not a big fan. It doesn't taste very good, in my opinion. And it's usually very tough and a little chewy. This, I don't know how they prepared it, but it must have been just braised forever or something like that. It was extremely tender, almost like melt in your mouth, tongue. I can't get through that without being ridiculous.
You're doing good. You're doing good. Okay, keep going. You're doing good.
It was good. I'm not even going to continue, but it was really good. They also had bone marrow, which have you ever had bone marrow?
I have. Bone marrow is awesome.
I love bone marrow. I'm actually, I think I'm physically addicted to bone marrow.
Bone marrow is one of those things where like you, I was up in San Francisco over New Year's, right? And I went up to this great French restaurant with a friend of mine. And we're like, oh, we should get bone marrow. Ha, ha, ha. That'll be really, really funny because you never had it before. And then we just ordered the tasting menu off them. And they basically came with this wonderful steak that had bone marrow on top of it. And we're like, well, now we have to eat it.
Right.
Awesome.
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 So, yeah, some place steak houses will serve it and you can get it on top of the steak and you kind of smush it in and then you eat it with a steak. This place was more of an appetizer. So they served it. It was half a bone. And it was the bone marrow inside the middle of the bone, and you scooped it off and put it on bread.
I don't know about that presentation, but I'm sure.
I have pictures. I put them on my food spotting. It was looked awesome. And, you know, anytime I have bone marrow, I feel like I'm a dog. Like, I can't stop eating it. I know what they're feeling like when they're trying to dig into the bone and just get the marrow out.
Like, I understand. So, feel like a dog, tongue puns? Like, what's happening?
I get it because the taste is so addicting. It's very rich and not everybody likes it because the bone marrow is a very, very rich. It you know what it feels? I mean, the texture is kind of like eating just a globule of fat. You know, for someone who hasn't had it.
You just sold that big time.
It is. It's off-putting for a lot of people, but the taste is spectacular. So the last thing I ate. This is
the best thing. You texted me about this, and I thought you were joking.
So when I was in Chicago, I had Roasted Pig Face, which was the name of one of our episodes, yeah. Which was not a pig in any way, shape, or form. It just looked like a pig, and the presentation was eggs and other things.
Which is total BS.
Total BS. So at this place, I actually ate a pig face. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I did. I had a half-cut roasted pig. So this was slightly disturbing.
Just slightly.
Slightly. So it came out on this big wooden board with bread and a big meat cleaver, and it was a pig's head cut right down the middle, roasted and served to you full.
I'm not on board.
Snout and everything.
I got to say, I'm not on board with this one.
It looked unreal. I mean, it was just, you're staring at this, you're staring at a pig face,
I'm
right?
I'm sure it looked like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, man. Come on.
Brian, it looked like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. of course, I had to try some, you know.
Oh, Jared in the chat room just made the best comment ever. Then Scott made jewelry out of the jaw and teeth.
I'm wearing it right now. I didn't like it, to be honest. I actually didn't like the taste. It was maybe it was the part of the cut I got. It was a dark pig's meat, right? You know,
my question was, it the whole, you say it was the head, was it the whole head or just the face of the animal?
Well, no, it was the whole head cut in half,
like the entire.
So like, if you took the head, cut it down the middle and put it on its side,
yeah,
that's what it was.
I don't know, what do you even eat there?
The cheeks and the, I mean, every. Oh. Listen, let me put it this way. By the time it was done, we had to table about 20 people. The only thing left was the skull. Two people at the table ate the eye.
You're jumping the shark big time this week, man.
I didn't eat the eye. I couldn't do it. But wow. Yeah, it was an experience.
The chat room is loving this story, Scott. And then Scott declared himself Lord of the Flies.
The Gorgles, oh. Downtown. If you want. Now, also, just to note, it wasn't just pig. I mean, there was meat, and there was also a unusually large vegetarian portion of the menu, which kind of shocked me. And the food was really good. I didn't expect them to have that, but they had they had sweet corn, which was really, really good. Broccoli with soy, chilies, and vinegar. I mean, it was, you know, like, okay, the vegetarian section was 7 dishes, and that was more than any of the other sections. Shocking for a place like this. I didn't expect it. So, I mean, really anybody could go there and eat something and really have an awesome meal.
Because people who are vegetarian for ethical reasons are gonna love going there.
I'm just saying. The Gorbals, downtown Los Angeles, pig head in all its glory, bacon wrap matzo balls. I'm really hungry right now. Just think about the bacon wrap matzo balls. Let's, you know, yeah, put that in your brain.
I'm just going to
bacon wrap
pretend this show stopped there is what I'm going to do.
So that's what I got on the food front. And next week, possibly, there will be a review of a Dole Whip. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Which you're obsessed with.
Yes. So there.
All right.
That's what I got for you.
All right. That was educational.
Sorry to all the vegetarian and vegans out there for that description.
You should apologize to everybody. It was kind of horrifying.
Hey, I'm just reporting it as I saw it.
People ate the eyes, really?
Yeah. It was a bet.
Of course it was.
They cut it in half with the cleaver and each person ate half of it. Yeah, I know.
Okay,
I know.
Sorry.
I couldn't watch.
Anyway, thanks for joining us, everybody. Hope you enjoyed most of the show.
I'm Scott.
I'm Brian. If you dig the show, tell your friends. We are on Twitter at BC Bishop
and Scotty G7.
And yeah, take care, you guys.